BBC New Generation artist Louis Schwitzgebel performing Schubert's Sonata in A Minor, Deutsch 845. And if you enjoyed that, there's more information about Louis and lots of videos, photos and other fun features with all of our NGAs, both past and present, if you check out our Facebook page or search BBC New Generation Artists online. Well, that's it for today's NGA special with me, Clemency Burton-Hill. I'll be back at the same time tomorrow for the next instalment in our Christmas series. In that show, we'll be hearing from old NGA favourite Christian Ila Hadland, as well as our second-year string ensemble, the Apollon Musaget Quartet. I hope you can join me then.
That was Clemency Burton-Hill. Hello, I'm John Shea. Welcome to This Evening on BBC Radio 3, and there's more Schubert later tonight. First of one of tonight's two return visits to the summer's proms. His C major grand duo, played by Imogen Cooper and Paul Lewis, is tonight at 10:15. Before that, in a few minutes' time, we'll be returning to the summer's proms for the beginning of Wagner's Ring Cycle. The whole thing was conducted by Daniel Barenboim at the Royal Albert Hall this summer. It all begins with Das Rheingold in a few minutes after the news. And then at 9:45, we welcome back to Radio 3 Joan Bakewell and a new series of Belief.
My guest on Belief is someone whose moral outlook has shaped the course of an outstanding career in the judicial system of the country. Lord Wolfe rose to be Master of the Rolls and then Lord Chief Justice of England and Wales. He ruled in many of the headline issues of the day, reducing the minimum sentence for the killers of James Bulger, giving Diane Blood the right to have children using her dead husband's sperm. Listen to Belief with me, Joan Bakewell, on BBC Radio 3 tonight at 9:45 in the evening.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's now a minute after 7 o'clock and here's the latest BBC news. The UK has been hit by gale force winds and heavy rain, causing widespread disruption. In Cumbria, a body has been found after a man fell into a river and a woman has died in a swollen river in Snowdonia. Thousands of people in Berkshire and Cornwall are without power. Wind speeds of 87 miles an hour have been recorded in North Wales and a severe flood warning is in place in Dorset. Train operators are warning of delays and cancellations, and motorists' organisations are advising drivers against all but essential travel. The former Labour government minister, Dennis McShane, has been sentenced to 6 months in prison for making false expense claims of almost £13,000. The judge at the Old Bailey acknowledged that the offences were not committed for personal gain, but said the deception involved had been considerable and prolonged. The Serious Fraud Office has opened a criminal investigation into bribery and corruption allegations at the aero engine manufacturer Rolls-Royce. The claims relate to deals made in Indonesia, China and other overseas markets. Talks to resolve some of the most contentious issues in Northern Ireland are due to resume later this evening. Political parties have been trying to reach a deal about parades and other issues connected to the Troubles. The discussions are being chaired by the former American diplomat Richard Haass, who previously said he wanted an agreement before Christmas. A former police officer has been sentenced to 19 years in prison by a judge at Newcastle Crown Court for rape and attempted rape. Wayne Scott also confessed to two common assaults. Cleveland police say there could be as many as 11 victims in the northeast. The sister of a British surgeon who died in a Syrian prison cell has told the BBC that the authorities there have admitted killing him. Publicly, the Syrian government says that Abbas Khan committed suicide. All the members of the Russian punk band Pussy Riot have now been released from prison as part of an amnesty. Those freed today described their release as a public relations stunt by the Kremlin. The women were sentenced for hooliganism after a protest performance at Moscow's main cathedral more than a year and a half ago. Mikhail Kalashnikov, the designer of the world's most widely used assault rifle, the AK-47, has died in Russia at the age of 94. Mr. Kalashnikov started to design weapons while serving in the Red Army during the Second World War, and he came up with the AK-47 in 1947. It became standard army issue 2 years later. In the city, the 100 share index closed up 72 points at 6,679. And the weather, well, as you heard at the beginning of this news bulletin, heavy rain and severe gales will continue to move eastwards this evening and overnight. Scattered showers will follow, and they could be wintry in places, with persistent snow across Scotland. There'll be overnight low temperatures of 8 degrees Celsius in London, 6 in Cardiff, 3 in Edinburgh and 2 in Belfast. And that's the news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at 4.5 minutes past 7. So now, as promised, time for another highlight from the 2013 Proms season. And across this week, we're going to hear Wagner's epic Ring Cycle. To introduce the first part, here's Tom Service.
Welcome to the Royal Albert Hall for the start of the greatest story ever told in music, Wagner's Ring Cycle. For the first time in the history of the Proms, we're going to hear a complete performance of all four operas of the Ring in a single season, all in celebration of the bicentenary of Wagner's birth. From tonight's Das Rheingold and the start of the Ring's cursed journey to Twilight of the Gods, Goethe Dämmerung. Daniel Barenboim conducts the Staatskapelle Berlin, the orchestra of the Staatsoper in Berlin, and there's a truly fabulous cast for each of the instalments, starting with tonight when Scottish baritone Ian Paterson makes his debut as the ruler of the gods, Wotan. Tomorrow night in Die Walküre, Nina Stemmer is Brunhilde. She's Brunhilde in Siegfried and Goethe Dämmerung as well, and Bryn Terfel is Wotan tomorrow. But the Royal Albert Hall right now is already shimmering with excitement for the start of the whole story, and it all begins right now with Das Rheingold, which was completed in 1854, has four scenes that play without an interval for 2.5 hours or so. When the opera opens, all is well with the world, with the Rhine, and the three Rhine maidens and their gold. Until that is, the Nibelung dwarf Alberich appears, and by renouncing love, Alberich is able to steal the Rhine maiden's gold to fashion it into a ring with which he can rule the world. In the second scene, the gods Wotan and his wife Fricka debate the bargain that Wotan has entered into with the giants to build him Valhalla, a castle for the gods. Wotan promised to give them Freya, the goddess of beauty, whose apples keep the gods ever youthful. But he's come up with a scheme to get out of this pretty stupid idea. Applause there for the Staatskapelle Berlin, who are on their feet welcoming their leader on stage. But Wotan has come up with a scheme to get out of this pretty stupid idea because the god of fire, Loga, has been dispatched to find something of even greater value than Freya to the giants. Impossible, Loga says, but there is a ring forged by a dwarf who's given up love and his gold. The giants, Fasolt and Fafner, whose entrance you can't miss with their marmorially lugubrious music, agree not to take off with Freya so long as they can get their hands on the gold. But that means that Loga and Wotan have to steal it from Alberich, which they do down in Nibelheim. Alberich has enslaved his people. His brother Mima has created a Tarnhelm, a helmet that turns anyone who wears it into a shapeshifter. Alberich unwisely shows off this magic to Wotan and Loga, becoming first a dragon and then an all too easily captured frog. They take Alberich prisoner back to their godly mountaintop. In the fourth and final scene of Das Rheingold, Alberich is forced to trade all of his gold for his freedom, including the ring, which Wotan swipes from his finger. Alberich curses the ring. Anyone who wears it will be killed by the next person who desires it. The giants return with Freya. For the bargain to be fulfilled, the giants demand that Wotan relinquish the ring. He refuses, but Erda, Earth Mother Goddess, older even than Wotan, suddenly appears and tells Wotan to give the ring to them. He does. Fafner and Fasolt, the giants, fight over it, and Fasolt is killed, fulfilling the curse for the first time. But at the end of the opera, it's as if all that nastiness never happened, and the gods climb a rainbow bridge of shimmering harp-festooned sound into Valhalla. The voices you'll hear in order of their appearance tonight in this performance, the Rhine Maidens, Aga Mikalai, Maria Gotsevskaya, and Anna Lapkovskaya, Johannes Martin Krenzle is the dwarf Alberich, Yekaterina Gubanova is Fricka, and Ian Paterson, the leader of the gods Wotan. Anna Samuel sings Freya, and the two giants Fasolt and Fafner are sung by Stefan Milling and Erik Halfvorsen. Marius Flad is Fro, and Jan Buchwald Donner, the god of fire Loga, Stefan Rugammer, and the hapless mimer Peter Bronder. Erda is sung tonight by Anna Larsen. The Staatskapelle Berlin is conducted by Daniel Barenboim, who's coming on stage now here at the Royal Albert Hall, accepting this huge applause from a sold-out Royal Albert Hall to conduct the most epic prelude in musical history, the existential upbeat to Wagner's Ring Cycle. Das Rheingold.
mich gern, neigtet ihr euch zu mir. Zuckt und zehrt sich mein Herz, lacht mir so zierliches Lob.
In eurer
mich aus.
grinst ein feuchtes Gesicht. Das Licht lässt mich aus, entreißen im Riss das Gold, schmieden in rächenden Ring.
Das Gold, vertragte mich ihr trotzig getügt, als sie die Meere allen ihr schüfen. Wie steht nun dank den Starken? Den Zolt sorge ich nicht.
Und nachts frevel in Leipzig,
spielst du in Last und im Schmund? Zum Vertrage mir riet, versprach mir Freier zu lösen. Auf ihn verlass ich mich nun.
Dir lass dich erlaus, dort schleifen rasch den Wesen verhaut. Wo hat dein schlauer
Bedacht, deine Macht ist dein. unendlich lohne. Haltest du so, in du geschlossen den Schwimm, ein Handel zu schlichten?
Wie? Welchen Handel hätte ich geschlossen? Wohl was mit den Riesen dort im Rate wuchst. Die denken an Dach und Fach, wollen sie frein, ein Haus muss sie erfreien. Ein stolzer Saal, ein starkes Schloss, aller Stand Wotans Wunsch. Haus und Sandschloss, die selige Burg, sie steht nun fest erbaut. Das Prachtgebäuer rief ich selbst, ob alles fest, forsch ich genau. Versold und Vorfahr fand ich bewährt. Ein Stein hangt im Gestell. Nicht weiß ich gar nicht, wie manche hier, der Hüt belästigt mich schien. Verglistig weißt du mir aus, nicht zu betrügen, bitte in Treuen dich wohl, von allen Göttern dein einziger Freund, nahm ich dich auf in der übeltrauenden Trost. Nun red und rate klug. Anders will ich dich ein, als weil auf Pflicht du gelobtest, zu lösen das hehre Pfand. Mit höchster Sorge drauf zu sinnen, wie es zu lösen das, hab ich gelobt. Oh, dass ich fände, was nie sie fügt, was nie hält.
Wunge sein Ort. Töricht bist du, wenn ich gar tückisch, ich selbst siehst du in Not. Wie hülf ich anderen zum Heil?
Schön ist das Gold im Halben, viel Mut schuf uns der Nibelung. Doch schau, entschlüpfte unserm Zange immer der Zerr. Neue Reiter sind uns der Nibelung, gibt das Gold im Macht.
Du da, Luge, Sakone Luk, was Großes gilt denn das Gold, das dem Nibelung es beliebt?
Ein Tag ist sie des Wassers geben, lachenden Kinder zur Lust. Doch hat es zum runden Reife gespielt, gibt es zur höchsten Macht. Gewinnt dem Mann die Welt.
Von des reines Gott hört ich rare Eiteronen berge sein roter Glanz. Macht und schätze schief ohne Maß ein Reif.
Gattentreue, trotze die Frau, triebe sie hold den Herrenschmuck, den Schimmer zergeschmiedet, der ich ins Wange des Heils.
Tiefst im Weimar du zu Recht des Reines. Jetzt fand ich's. Hört, was euch fehlt. Von Treues Frucht genossen ihr heute noch nicht. Die goldene in ihren Kanton. Zwinder, an jeder Karte freier von je, knausend die köstliche Frucht. Denn halb so echt nur bin ich wie sie. Doch ihr setzt alles auf das hingende Obst, das wussten die Riesen wohl. Auf euer Leben legt sie's an, und sollt ihr das Herz.
alles geschmiedet und fertig gefügt, wie ich's befahl. So wollte der Tropfschlau mich betrügen, für sich erhalten das hehre Geschmeid, das meine List die zu schmieden gelehrt. Kenn ich nicht dummen Dieb! So, höre mich noch, 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 nehmt das für ein Diebsgerüst.
Hui, hui, au, au,
au! Gott, oh, Tumpe, dein Werk bewährt sich gut. Oh, 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 lieblunge Ball, neigt euch und all euch. Überall weiter den Reich zu bewachen, Ruhe und Rast, nicht zu zerrappen. Wir schaffen wohl nicht hier hinschauen, wenn ich die Worte seiner Gewalt nicht unter der Zeit hier mit ihm war. Oh, 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 hört ihn erlacht, der lieblungen Herr.
Ohne Ruhe, lass dich ja, vielleicht den lästigen selbst überlisten, in meine Gewalt ihn zu werfen, den Ring ihm zu entreißen, dass ich gleich jetzt entkühne, mir freie selber dafür.
Warum, du klug und glückte dies nicht?
Ach, wer das Werk ich wirkte,
den Zauber, der ihm entzugt,
den Zauber, der riet ich nicht recht. Mir das Werk erriet
und mir es entriss,
der lehrte mich
doch leider zu spät, welche List lag in den Helm. Entschwand er, doch spiel in den blinden Klug und Schauber sein Arm. Da schuf ich den Dummen schön zu Wand.
Es steht nicht leicht, Herr Lind, der Fahrt.
Woher liegt der Feind, hilft keiner List?
Mit euren Gefragen, die Fremde,
Freunde, die von mir an Oper fall mir der Nebel und Fall.
Nehmt euch in Acht, Albrecht Dat!
Sei warm, wir hier. Wartin, Flüges mir!
Mich ein Dank.
Im Licht all
jetzt nur in der List geschehen. Bist du falscher, ihr Freund, wie mir freut, du einst warst. Aha, mich freut, von ihnen fürcht ich dann nichts.
So täglich kannst du mir trauen.
Deiner Untreu trau ich nicht deiner Treu. Doch getrost trotz ich euch allen. Das ist für heut ein kärglich Häufchen. Kühl und mächtig soll er künftig sich sehen. So war's doch front, ihr der Hort, erfreutlos Liebelheim und nichts für Schätze hier falsch. Schätze zu schaffen und Schätze zu fehlen, nützt mir nie. Nacht, doch mit dem Mord in der Höhle gehäuft, denk ich an Hunger zu werden. Die ganze Welt will ich mit ihm mir zu eigen.
Oh!
Gestalt mir zu tauchen.
Taucht dir her.
Niemand sieht mich, wenn er mich sucht. Doch überall bin ich geborgen.
So, ohne Sorge, bin ich selbst sicher vor dir.
Seltsames fand ich, doch solches Wunder gewahrt ich nicht. Im Park ohne Gleichen kann ich nicht glauben, wenn dies meine Möglichkeit macht, verdammt.
Als komm ich Glück und lerne die Ruhe.
Bis ich geprüft, bezweifle ich Zwerg, kein Wort.
Verkluget lädt sich zum Platz in der Blüte, doch lag ich leid. Bestimmt, in welcher Gestalt soll ich ja vor dir stehen?
In welcher du willst, nur mach vor Staunen mich stumm.
Die Kröte, greife sie rasch!
verflucht, ich bin gefangen.
Weil die Fest ist gekommt.
Schändlicher Schächer, du Schalk, du Schelm, löse den Ast, bringe mich los, den Frevel, sonst büßest du frecher. Gefangen bist du fest mir gefesselt, wie du die Welt, was lebt und bebt, in deiner Gewalt schon wendest. Gebunden liegst du vor mir.
ihr begehrt, den Ort und dein helles Wort, gieriges Gaunergezücht. Doch behalt dich mir Mut in Ried, des Wortes entlad ich dann kleid, denn von Neuem gewonnen und von ich genährt, ist er bald durch des Ringes gewohnt. Eine Witzigung wird, die weise mich macht, zu teuer nicht zahl ich die Zucht. Lass mir die Lehre, ich den Pfand, erlegst du den Ort. Löst mir die Hand, so ruf ich ihn her. Das Hände schweigt, das Lobe dort hält, das gibt mir nun glücklich zurück.
Zur Buße gehört auf die Weite.
Das Blut hat die. Doch nur Geduld, der den Alten mir schuf, schafft einen anderen. Doch halt ich die Macht der Liebe gehorcht. Euch alles. Jetzt löst ihr Bösen das Band.
Bist du befriedigt? Lass ich ihn frei.
Ein goldener Ring ragt dir am Finger. Es war. Er ab dich gehört mit zum Mord.
Der Ring!
Zu deiner Lösung musst du ihn lassen. Das Leben doch nicht den Ring, den er so willst. Löse ich mir Leib und Leben, den Ring auch muss ich mir lösen. Hand und Haupt, Auge und Ohr sind nicht mehr mein eigen, als hier dieser rote Ring.
benannt du das Wort, worauf du den schimmenden Schuss. Was dein Eigen, was du Ärger der Wasser und Tiefen entwandt. Eines Reimes Wächter, hole dir Rat, ob ihr Kult sie zu eigen mir gaben, dass du zum Ring dir gelobt. Schlinge hält dich, frei fahr dahin. Bin ich nun frei? Wirklich frei? So grüß euch denn meine Freiheit. Verflucht sei dieser Ring. Ob sein Gold mir Macht ohne Maß, nun zeugt sein Zauber Tod, den er ihn trägt. Ein Fluch
tragender Mag rasteten wir. Mit treuem Mut des Vertrages Pfand pflegten wir. Reden, die Lesung ehr.
Bereit liegt die Lösung, es alles muss sein und wird nicht gemessen.
Das Weib zu missen, wisse, gemutet mich weh, soll aus dem Sinn sie mir schwinden, des Geschmeides Wort schweifet denn so, dass meinen Blick im Liehende uns ihr verdeckt.
Thank you. der Wirk hilf auf den Hof.
Wie? Auch den Helm?
Hurtig, her mit ihm!
Lass ihn denn fahren!
So sind wir denn fertig. Seid ihr zufrieden?
Freier, die Schiene schau ich nicht mehr. So ist sie gelöst. Muss ich sie lassen? Wie noch blitz ihr Blick zu mir her, des Auges Stern strahlt mir so fern, durch eines Walde muss ich erspähen. Seh ich die sonnige Auge, von dem Leiden lass ich nicht an.
Nehmt euch rat, ich beschaff mir die Ritze.
Nimmer sagt er, seht ihr denn nicht, ganz spannt uns der Mord.
Mitnichten, Freund, an Wut, an Zwingen, glänzt vom Gold noch ein Ring. Endet die Rette zu füllen, diesen Ring.
Lasst euch raten, den Reittöchtern gehört dies Gold. Ihnen gibt Wut alles wieder.
Was Schwanz ist nun da, was wär ich mir erbeugt, ohne Morgen was ihr wollt, alles gewollt ich, und eure Welt doch nicht wollen, dass ihr die Welt ausverwischt und wollt.
mich Sorgen und fürchten. Ich muss ihn fassen, alles erfahren.
Was willst du bitte noch?
All meine Blut an.
Halt, du Gierige, gönne mir auch was. Redliche Teilung taugt uns beide.
Mehr an der Maid als an Gold, nach der verliebten Deck. Mit Milz und Taufe mucht ich dich tonen, ohne zu teilen, hättest du freier gefreit. Teil ich den Hort, billig behalte ich die größte Hälfte für.
Schändliche du, mir nieder Schiff, euch ruf ich zur Richtung. Teile das Fleisch, friedlich den Hort.
Den Hort lass ihn rachen, halte nur auf den Ring.
Zurück, du Frecher, mein ist der Ring. Mir blieb es für freies Blitz.
Hand mit der Wurst, der Ring ist frei.
Ich kann ihn, ihr gehört er.
Halt ihn fest, dass er nicht kommt.
Oh,
was ich tu.
Truly Valhalla-like cheer for Daniel Barenboim and the Staatskapelle Berlin for that performance of Wagner's Das Rheingold at the Proms. Daniel Barenboim shakes the hand of tonight's concert master Wolf-Dieter Batzdorf and hails the six harps at the back of the orchestra, the Wagner tubas, the brass section with its contrabass trombone, its bass trumpet and the huge string section, and accepts that gigantic ovation from this completely full Royal Albert Hall. The last words you heard in Das Rheingold, goodness and truth dwell in the waters, false and base, all those who dwell up above. The warning of the Rhine maidens at the end of the piece. Words that Wotan perhaps ought to heed for what happens next in the ring cycle. The singers you heard in that performance, the Rhine maidens, Aga Mikolai, Maria Gotsevskaya and Anna Lapkovskaya, Johannes Martin Krenzler was Alberich, Ekaterina Gubanova Fricka, and Ian Patterson sang the leader of the gods, Wotan. Anna Samuel was Freya, and the two giants, Fasolt and Fafner, were sung by the granite-hewn Stefan Milling and Erik Halvorsen. Marius Flad was Fro and Jan Buchwald Donner. The God of Fire, Loge, Stefan Rügammer, and Mima, Peter Bronder. The Rhine Maidens coming on stage for their applause, for this ovation from the Promise and the rest of the Royal Albert Hall audience. Erda was sung tonight by Anna Larsson, thrillingly emerging from above the bust of Henry Wood that stands behind the timpanist on stage here at the Royal Albert Hall, just underneath the organ. A wonderful coup de théâtre. And Justin Way was the stage director who commanded all of the entrances and exits around the Royal Albert Hall stage here, making the whole place a pretty convincing impression of Valhalla. Staatskapelle Berlin and Daniel Barenboim on their feet again at the end of that performance. Well, there's more tomorrow night in Die Walküre. You can hear Brunhilde, sung by Nina Stemmer, and Votan of Bryn Terfel. Another massive round of applause for the cast tonight. And the action and terrible consequences of Votan's life of bargains and contracts and thievery begins to bear its mythic and murderous fruit. That prophecy of the Rhine Maidens really ought to be ringing in all of our ears.
That was Tom Service at the Royal Albert Hall back in the summer, and you can join him for Die Walküre, part two of Wagner's Ring Cycle, tomorrow evening, and that's just after 7 o'clock.
Christmas Day on BBC Radio 3. At noon, Composer of the Week explores a crucial day in the life of one Ludwig van Beethoven.
He introduced, for the first time, his 5th and 6th symphonies, his 4th piano concerto and the choral fantasy.
Christmas carols and readings from the candlelit chapel of King's College, Cambridge at 2 o'clock. Sean Rafferty at home with conductor Sir John Elliott Gardner at 4:30. And the 2013 BBC Proms Revisited. John Wilson's Bank Holiday Hollywood Rhapsody Prom at 7. And Vivaldi's Four Seasons from Nigel Kennedy at 9:30. Join us for Christmas on BBC Radio 3.
Well, next programme this evening is the first in a new series of Belief. Joan Bakewell introduces her first Christmas guest in a couple of minutes at 9:45. And then we're back at the Proms again for some late night Schubert, his C major grand duo played by Imogen Cooper and Paul Lewis at 10:15, leading the way up to Jazz on 3 at 11. So before Belief, in a couple of minutes, Christmas on Radio 3 wouldn't be Christmas without a dip into Franz Liszt's album The Christmas Tree. And this movement accompanies something you probably shouldn't try at home unless your name is Loge. This is Lighting the Candles on the Christmas Tree. Vintage recording, as you'll obviously have spotted, that was from the early 1950s. Alfred Brendel was the pianist, and he was playing part of The Christmas Tree by Franz Liszt. that scherzo movement, Lighting the Candles on the Christmas Tree. This is BBC Radio 3. It's 9:45. Late Night Schubert from the Summer's Proms in half an hour. But now it's time for the first programme in a new series of Belief with Joan Bakewell.
My guest on Belief is someone whose moral outlook must have shaped and coloured a career of outstanding distinction in the judicial system of this country. Lord Wolfe was called to the bar in 1955 and has heard many of the most high-profile cases in recent legal history. After the Strangeways prison riots of 1990, his comprehensive report found conditions in the prison to have been intolerable and called for a more humane prison service. In 1983, he ruled that doctors could prescribe contraception for minors. In 1997, he ruled that Diane Blood had the right to have a child using her dead husband's sperm. In October 2000, he reduced the minimum custody period for the killers of James Bulger by 2 years, all high-profile decisions. Lord Wolfe was made Lord Chief Justice of England and Wales in 2000, having been Master of the Rolls for the 4 previous years. He retired from the top job in 2005 and was then a judge of the Court of Final Appeal in Hong Kong. In 2005, he conducted a review of the European Court of Human Rights. Lord Wolfe, justice, where does it come from?
Well, I think it comes from a basic need of the fact that we live in societies, and societies involving different people each need to feel that they are being dealt with justly. And if they aren't, then they're unhappy.
So it has evolved in human life as a need for society by which it can survive.
Yes, I see it so. And societies are less happy if they're ones where they are deprived of justice.
Does our judicial system derive from the Judeo-Christian tradition?
I think its basis comes from our concept of what was the role of the sovereign. The sovereign was the provider of justice. And so, looking back into the distance of the common law system, the High Court judges who went out to different parts of the country were providing the king's justice throughout the kingdom. And so it was always linked very much with the role of the sovereign to be the fount of justice.
But what about the established church, of course, giving a foundation to the nature of monarchy and therefore calling on things like, I suppose, the Ten Commandments?
Well, that of course means that it wasn't divorced from influences of that nature. And they, of course, played a very important role in the justice system. And the Lord Chancellor, who was the king's sort of delegate so far as the provision of justice was concerned, was very much linked also with the established church.
Now, I want to find how all that relates to your background, because you were born into a Jewish family and you grew up in Gosforth and then Glasgow. Tell me about your background, your family.
Yes, well, my family, by no accident, were in Newcastle, because Newcastle was a port, and they come from Europe. My parents were born to families already established in this country, so I was at least a third generation in this country, so far as my mother was concerned, and my father probably fourth generation.
And were you very aware of your Jewish inheritance?
Yes. I mean, it was very much part of their life and part of my life.
So it was observed in the household kosher?
We had a sort of liberal observance, but my mother provided a kosher home.
And was it explained to you what that amounted to in any terms of belief?
It was explained to me by my father when I went off to boarding school for the first time. And the message that he wanted to give me was, never hide your faith. You won't be able to, even if you want to. Because whatever your approach is, people will regard you as being a Jew. And I think that's so. And he instilled in me the idea that it was something of which I could be and should be proud.
And what did that pride involve? Did it involve a very theological point of view, or was it more to do with the community of Judaism?
more to do with the culture of Judaism, but we were observant so far as the main Jewish festivals were concerned. The family were interested in tradition, and that's what really has stuck with me, the idea of Jewish traditions that have gone on for thousands of years.
So you still go to synagogue, you observe all the festivals?
Far from all the festivals. I observe the main festivals, and I go to synagogue a few times a year.
Your father's explanation before you went to boarding school, was he apprehensive for you, do you think, that you might collide with a world that was less than kind to Jewish boys?
Well, I think it was something he thought I should know and be prepared for. And at that time, it was something to expect that you'd be different and pointed out for being different. And in my school boarding days at my main school, there were certain things I didn't eat.
This was at Fetters, where you were in the Fetters school in Scotland.
Yes. And to an extent, he was right.
Were you teased? Were you bullied?
I'm not an easy person to bully, and I don't think I would describe it as being bullied, but there were certainly times when I was teased. You must recall, of course, this was a time when British troops weren't having an easy time in Palestine as a result of the actions of people like the Stern Gang, and so this obviously had its effect. And also the fact that there were very few Jews in Scotland, and they didn't really know what a Jew was. And I think, probably, I was one of the first, if not the first, Jew to go to Fetters.
You spoke of not being easy to bully. So already you did have a sense of what was the right thing to do and the right attitude to people. Do you look back to those days as seeing the emergence of someone quite resolute in their attitudes?
I always think that Fetters did me a very good turn in that it promoted in me the belief that if I could get through in Fetters, then I would be all right in the world.
There is an episode told many times about what happened to you when you were unjustly punished, in your view. Tell me.
Well, it was over a silly thing. We had cubicles at Fetters at that time, until you were among the most senior. And for very good reasons, it was felt no boy should enter the cubicle of another. And you don't need to go into details to explain why that was thought to be desirable in a single-sex school. And on occasion, I had very unruly hair those days, much more than I've got now. And I leant over to try and do something about my hair, because I hadn't got a mirror in my cubicle, in a friend's mirror, in order to do my hair. But I had well in mind that this was something I should not be doing, so my feet were outside the cubicle, but my body was in, and I felt that as long as my feet were outside, I was not committing an offence, which was a real barrack room lawyer sort of point.
You were caned for this too, and you felt that that was unfair.
Well, not the fact that I was caned, but because I wanted to appeal, and my housemaster said, Wolf, when I was in the services, what you did is you took your punishment and then appealed. And I'm afraid that my legal senses were at that time sufficiently developed to think that if you've served your punishment, there's not much point in appealing. And if your appeal failed, which that was treated as a failure, then you got two extra strokes.
I think you were already a lawyer in the making. Did you realise quite early that you wanted to follow the law? And what did you think as a schoolboy that the law amounted to?
Well, I'm not sure I knew very much about what it amounted to, but I was very attracted by the career of a barrister. And it was not a natural career for me because I did have a speech impediment. And my housemaster wasn't enthusiastic about the idea. And the less enthusiastic he became, the more enthusiastic I became. And I think I liked it because it was going to be a profession as a barrister where you were reliant on what abilities you had and you were taken for what you are. And I must say that proved to be my experience when I went to the bar.
So you not only had the strong will to persist in this, but you overcame a stammer, and you later discovered that you probably were dyslexic at school. So you're someone who's out to overcome any kind of hurdles.
Well, I think we all respond well to challenges. And I'm afraid dyslexia is a family symbol. And I'm very glad to say my son and grandchildren are also finding that that's a problem they have had to overcome, and they do very well at it.
So you're going on to a career in which you are entering a world of people who haven't got a background like yours, who have done wrongs of various kinds. Did you bring a sympathetic moral outlook to wrongdoing?
I would like to put it slightly differently, if I may. My outlook wasn't sympathetic to wrongdoing. It was the belief that we all have good within us and that you have different opportunities. And to some extent, we also have opportunities of doing things which are wrong.
Where did that belief come from?
I think that it may be connected with the sort of biblical background of being Jewish. It's just always been part of me. And I've never thought that any human being should be written off.
So when it came to the prison riots and the report that you wrote about the conditions in prison, you were recommending a much more generous situation in prisons. Prisons were horrible in those days. I don't know what they're like today, but there have been many changes. And certainly one reads a populist view that prisoners become too lenient, that prisoners have television sets and gyms and they can then have study and so on.
Which I regard as nonsense, actually.
The attitude that
Yes, I mean, my wife and I spent one night locked up in prison together for charity. And when that door closes, you know that if you're being locked up, that is in itself a very significant deprivation. You don't go to prison to be punished. You go to prison because you did what was wrong and you're being serving a sentence. And what should happen in prison is to take advantage of the fact that you're there to reduce the prospects of your reoffending. Sadly, all too often, what happens is because of the conditions that exist.
But punishment is not a part of that?
It's a narrow distinction I'm drawing, perhaps a legalistic distinction. The punishment is the deprivation of your liberty. It's not then the job to make it cruel and unusual what has happening to you. You should be taking the opportunity for the benefit of society, not for the benefit of the person who's being punished, to ensure